Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for the 16th of December. Welcome, Tim. Welcome, Catherine.
Good evening.
Good evening. Happy holidays.
Yes, well, same to y'all. I'm glad y'all could both make it in. I know that it's Christmas season with everybody doing, you know, shopping and whatnot, and it's the weather's turned a little bit on us. And, Tim, I understand you're a little under the weather, so I'm glad you could tough it out tonight.
Oh, yeah, I'm a real trooper here.
Well, it was kind of a week where there was a few things going on that made it real active, and on other fronts it was pretty quiet. But we did get a new poll for both Georgia and Iowa, many new polls for Iowa, but both from Strategic Vision. But we got a Georgia poll, which is, of course, right in our wheelhouse in the South. And not a lot of changes in a good many of the races and ratings they do. Sonny Perdue's approval rating, you know, the drought is in full swing. I think people could form their opinions, and unfortunately it has not hurt him a lot yet. It's 56% approval, 34% disapproval. What do y'all make of that? Catherine?
I just can't believe that people aren't upset about the drought and aren't blaming it on him, but there's no understanding these things, I guess.
Yeah. Tim, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think a lot of people don't know the history of this thing, David, what we've talked about, the plan that Roy Barnes had and things like that. And they're just not connecting it, the drought with any failures by the governor right now.
Yes, I mean, he just really is. He just happy-go-lucky smiles and everything seems to be okay. I mean, that's it. He takes a photo op of,
absolutely,
you know, something or does something pretty superficial, and that's all there is said about it. It's just surprising me, but as long as his numbers stay this way, it's hard for us to build up any traction on any level since he's the, you know, kind of the head of the party, of the Republican Party in Georgia.
Well, it's still part of the newness of the thing, don't you think, David? I mean, we're only talking about 5 years that the Republicans have been in power in the state. Is that long enough yet for people to form a lot of negative opinions of them?
Well, and also, he really hasn't done anything. I don't know how much I've said it on this show, but I've said it in other places. He really doesn't do a lot of things. I mean, there is no Sonny Perdue legacy unless it's in action. And a lot of times you have to do things to make people angry, to change things around. Although inaction, in this case, with issues like transportation and water, are worse than doing something controversial, I think.
Well, yeah, this water thing is coming into people's houses. It's affecting them, but still, they haven't connected that with Sonny Perdue yet. They know they're mad at somebody about this. They just don't know who.
Well, and I think part of it's all like, oh, we don't control the rain. No human controls the rain. It's you know, God, forces of nature, what have you. But they don't understand that you can prepare for it by building reservoirs and whatnot, even if the rain's less than it should be in a particular year.
Well, yeah, and also they can, you know, let us know the you know, seriousness of the situation so that we can, you know, conserve and try to, you know, participate in the process instead of telling us, you know, very late in the game, how bad it is. I think that's the thing that bothered me the most.
Yes.
Not living near Lake Lanier, or, you know, I mean, I didn't realize how bad it was until all of a sudden it was all over the news.
And yes, and then another thing that makes it more unexcusable, we talked about it a few weeks ago, Clayton County, which has no lake in it, no true lake, they built and prepared back in the late 80s, underground aquifers and tapped it, and they have no water problem in Clayton County. And it shows that if you prepared, you know, years ago, and that's further back than Sonny Perdue was even in the state Senate, but still, I mean, there were some reservoirs that would have made it better had those been enacted in the early part of this decade than that was on Sonny Perdue's watch. I guess moving down the poll, the next two are the approval ratings of both senators. Johnny Isaacson continues to be more popular than Saxby Chambliss, although their disapproval ratings are very similar. That just shows that people, you know, for whatever reason, like Johnny Isaacson better. It's not a huge chink in Saxby Chambliss's armor in that he's still over 50% at 53% approval rating. What do we get to do to that? Have that number move, especially when you contrast it with George Bush's approval ratings on overall and other issues in Georgia?
Well, I think Sonny needs to make about one more big mistake like he did on this immigration thing, and he's just the kind of guy that will pull another mistake, a big gaffe, something like that. Other than that, I'm not sure what we could do about it.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what we do. I mean, it seems like there's already plenty has been done or not done, like you said, but it doesn't seem to hurt him.
Yes, and it seems like maybe there's some states that like incumbents and some states that don't. And it may be more that we're not so much in a Republican phase, or if we may be a little bit in a Republican phase, but we're also in a in an incumbent phase where incumbents aren't criticized as heavily as you would think they would be.
David, on the disparity between Isaacson and Chambliss, I've met both of them. I don't know if y'all have. Isaacson's actually a much nicer fella than Saxby Chambliss is. I think that's one thing that drives the disparity. Another thing, I think there is a hardcore group of us that is not going to forget the election between Saxby Chambliss and Max Cleland. We may not be able to knock that number of his down, but it's not going to ever go up much, I can tell you that.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. And, I mean, I don't know. I've always heard, I've never met either of them, but they always say that Johnny Isaacson is more of a moderate. I mean, I don't really think he is, but he's managed to convey that image. So I think that people just view him that way.
Yeah, I think he's crafted it. I mean, if you looked at those voting records, it's probably 2%, you know, on some conservative rating scale with each other, and I don't know what issues they do differ on, but I think it's maybe more of a matter of style.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think if one of them were to buck, you know, the Bush administration, I think most people put their money that it would be Isaacson, not Chambliss. And then I guess that brings us the reason Chambliss's approval rating's more pertinent right now is looking at the U.S. Senate race.
Sure.
You know, we'll see one poll, and we'll you know, there was a poll. What pollster was that, Tim? That was it was around the time we had Del Cardwell on, and it showed that Chambliss was under 50% against Cardwell and possibly against other challengers. But then this number in Strategic Vision is just got it right back up over.
What was it? Was it Matt Towery's poll, Insider Advantage?
It may have been Insider Advantage. It may have been Survey USA. But they actually it showed a glimmer of hope, and it was still a pretty, you know, he was still leading by double digits, but it was hopeful, whereas this one, I mean, he polls, you know, 4 to 5 points over his approval rating against all the challengers.
Yeah.
Vernon Jones does slightly better. I have to think that's a function of name ID than possible vote share than of the other ones, but it kind of just, and it seems to always be this way. It's Jones comes the closest, Cardwell comes next. Sometimes it's Cardwell closer than Jones, then Rand Knight, then Lanier. It's almost in order of how they join the race, if you will.
Yeah, that's true. It is.
You know, I do think that Cardwell, you have to think that he has a little more name ID from WSB, but then I think it may be people don't necessarily know the name, but they'll definitely know the face. And when people tell them a little bit about him, they go, oh, yeah, I remember that guy from the news. So that means that there's going to be a little money or a little some type of, what is it called, earned media, somehow to get his name and face out there together to take advantage of that.
And, David, don't you think that Chambliss is getting that extra five-point bump off of name recognition as well?
Yeah.
It'd have to be, or just the fact, maybe they say the Republican Saxby Chambliss, and that, or the incumbent Saxby Chambliss, and he gets a little bit of a bump off of that. But you would think that his approval rating number would be more in line, and also you would think that the Democratic candidate's number would come closer to that disapproval number, because I just have a hard time believing that a person that disapproves of Saxby Chambliss is that much undecided at this point.
It really depends. You know, it could be a Republican who disapproves of Saxby because of immigration or something. But
Right. When
given the opportunity to say whether they'd vote for a Democrat or a Republican, they are always going to vote for a Republican.
That's true. There is a sliver of those folks. But, I mean,
yeah.
They have to be a pretty small group.
There's a lot of diehard Republicans.
Yes.
And,
just like
and
there are
David,
diehard Democrats.
Also, David, it might be a little group of folks that say, you know, I don't like Chambliss, but I don't even know who these other guys are.
Yes, exactly. There's going to have to be some name ID behind them. Now, the good news is this week there was a form, and I guess we'll begin to move to that in a bit after we finish the poll. But in the poll, there was a few more questions. George Bush continues to do very very poorly on all the questions except for maybe the terrorism question, and you guys think that's even moved down too. Catherine, what was your take on?
Well, I just can't believe that there's still 41% that approve of his handling of the economy, 39% overall approval. I mean, I just think that's amazing. I mean, I would think those numbers would be way, way lower than that.
Yes,
the national numbers like 23% to 28% or something?
Yes, I mean, obviously he's doing much better here than he is nationally.
But he's still
upside down, and you've got to think being upside down that Democrats will be doing better in some of these races, because if Chambliss's vote were to match Bush's approval rating, he'd be in trouble. I mean, face it, if he was at 41% or actually his overall job is 39, you know, he'd be in trouble.
Well, that's
why
when Democrats run, they have to talk about how, you know, Saxby Chambliss and George Bush. Every time you mention one of them's name, you got to mention Bush too.
Yes, and that's going to then get into the next thing. How does the top of the ticket in 2008 differentiate itself from George Bush? Can it? Because if it becomes Bush for both that nominee and all the federal candidates running under, you know, that's really going to drag them down and make this thing closer. And I guess on to the presidential. Well, I guess one more number before we get to the presidential that I think is very, very is very interesting. Do you think Georgia's headed in the right direction or wrong direction? And this doesn't have to do anything with partisanship. I mean, you think a Republican voter could still say, hey, we're headed in the wrong direction. There's been absolutely nothing done about traffic in this state. People are spending all this time in the metro area. And then, of course, in other parts of the state, there's not the job growth there needs to be. And then the water is almost everywhere in the state's affected. And yet 54% of the people think Georgia's headed in the right direction. I mean, is that just optimism for the sake of optimism or what? What do you make of that, Tim?
I think I make up it D's and R's voting there, David, because those numbers are exactly opposite around the country. Georgia's still a deep red state.
Yeah, and it matches almost exactly Sonny's approval rating.
Yep. It does, but there are real issues. I mean, even if, you know, Democrats were in control and we were having some of the same issues, you'd have to say, hey, how can everything be headed in such a great direction? I mean, this is just not the same outlook for our state that we have now that we had, say, in the late 90s. You know, the growth is not the same positive growth now. It's just now more building of traffic. The jobs aren't coming to other parts of the state the way they were. You know, they had the Pooler car plant. They had these plants here and there, and it's just not, particularly in South Georgia, not happening. It just didn't seem like there's the reason for all this optimism. In Georgia, I believe the metro Atlanta area is what, the second highest mortgage foreclosure area in the country after Nevada. Just doesn't seem like a reason to be so sunny. And that's Sonny with a U in Georgia.
But it's partisan driven.
Yeah, it is.
There is no logic to it.
Yeah.
And it would probably be interesting to learn what the geographic makeup of these polls is. You know, if they're not calling very many people in South Georgia or, you know, outside of Metro Atlanta, then that's going to color it, too.
Well, you think they'd have to...
Well, I mean, they have to call some, but...
They would have to make it geographically equal across the state. I mean, if you're going to do a poll correctly, you'd have to, you know, break it down congressional districts or five regions of the state and look where the population is. I mean, you know, if you don't, you know, look at demographic factors, if you get, you know, 75% men, 25% women, if you get 5% black voters, I mean, whatever it is, if it doesn't match the state, the poll's just not valid.
Right.
So you got to think that they have, I mean, I think David Johnson's strategic vision, they know how to do their math. Their methodology is not bad. So therefore, I would think that they would, you know, look at getting a fair sampling of around the state. And I guess the final two questions are the presidential race in Georgia. Let's just go to the Republican side first. Mike Huckabee is catching fire everywhere in the country other than New Hampshire, and he's leading in Georgia 23%, and that means he's passed Fred Thompson, which I never could exactly figure out why Fred Thompson was ever leading, but now he's number two, and I think that guy is sinking like a stone. What are y'all's thoughts on the Republican side, Catherine?
Well, I just happened to be looking at some fundraising numbers today, and I was shocked to learn that this was as of third quarter, so it doesn't include, I guess, Huckabee's raised a whole bunch of money in the last month. But he has raised, up until, you know, the reports that have been in, almost the same amount of money as Dennis Kucinich. It's like just over $2 million, like $2.5 million or something. And I think it's remarkable how he's, you know, zooming up in the polls with that such little money compared to, like, you know, Mitt Romney with like $60 million or something. I think that guy is a force to be reckoned with. I've been saying it for a month now.
Yes, and he continues to raise more money now.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he's raising. I heard somebody say that they heard him, a quote from him, that he's raised more money in November than he had the entire 12 months prior.
Yes.
But still, that only means he's got, you know, less than $5 million or something.
Yes, and speaking of looking down further down, Ron Paul's at sixth. But don't y'all have to feel that this guy moves up to, like, third or fourth third or so in some of these states?
Yeah, I don't understand
why
that Ron Paul thing.
I don't understand it either, but he's got all this buzz, and his supporters are so hardcore that I think in a lot of places, and particularly a state like New Hampshire where they have more of a libertarian bent anyway, this guy may end up surprising and moving up past some people that are kind of, you know, have no buzz right now. I mean, you got Romney who seems to be sinking in places. I mean, I think he's just going to pass. I mean, he could pass a Thompson and a Romney in a lot of these places.
Oh, I think he could. I think he could. There's, like you said, there's more buzz around him than, I mean, Thompson and Romney are... they're just dull. I mean, who cares? Like,
yeah,
they don't get any attention anymore.
And you got to think, when Tancredo and Duncan Hunter drop out, I mean, maybe they're just between, say, 3-5% of the polls. I'd have to think Ron Paul gets the lion's share of those votes. Don't you, Tim?
Yes, I do. And I've been talking to one of his supporters on the political blogs, a fellow, interestingly enough, who goes by the name of James Madison. And, He is swearing to me that Ron Paul is going to crack double digits in some of these states. He said, you watch. He said even a state like Alaska, he believes Paul could win the thing. I'm not so convinced myself, but I think you're right. Watch out for him.
Yes, it's just interesting how that could happen. And then, of course, then he could end up, you know, doing really well, but building some kind of base and then taking it all over the Libertarian Party, running as a Libertarian, particularly if the candidate's more like a Huckabee, which the social side of Libertarianism, they wouldn't like Huckabee, and then that could really cause problems for the Republicans in November. But then on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton still leads by 13 points in Georgia, which is probably one of her larger lead states. Tim, what do you make of the... what do you say?
I've got it 7.
Yeah.
Oh, well, my math's bad. I'm sitting here... transposing papers. It's been a long day. Going here, there, and where. Yes, seven. Still, it's probably one of her larger leads, because, I mean, she's lost her lead to Barack Obama in Iowa and other places.
I would like to be a fly on the wall in her next senior staff meeting. I would like to hear what is going on. I hear, for instance, that, and we all have, that President Clinton is not very happy with the way the campaign's being run. We know she had to let her senior person in New Hampshire go this week.
Things could be a little bit in disarray.
Catherine?
I think that was a bonehead thing for that guy to say.
Oh,
glad they let him go.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was something that was kind of known. It wasn't like it was a secret thing. And I mean, now we'll say this. The Republicans will use it. I mean, there is no doubt about that. He was right about that. But then if it's not part of the team strategy to let it out, then why are you singing from your own playbook?
Don't you think she made a mistake, or her campaign made a mistake a couple of months ago by starting to talk about this inevitability thing?
Yes.
She peaked really soon. I will say this. I was talking to somebody over the weekend that's in Iowa, you know, pretty high-level staff from one of the campaigns, and they told me, they said, you know, the people in Iowa have not made up their minds. The race is very, very fluid. And then, of course, all the reactions from other states are based on what they're hearing about what's going on in Iowa. So, obviously, you know, Barack Obama has a momentum. There's just no denying that. But it may not be as strong and as solid to last all the way through. I mean, really, there's, you know, any of the top three candidates could end up being first. And I think people, you know, off the Chris Matthews show, I think I heard something similar that, you know, that you could mix it up and any of the three could win it, and then you could have them finish in any order.
Oh, yeah, I think that's true. The only problem is for John Edwards, because I think he really has to win Iowa.
Yes, he doesn't have a follow-up act in New Hampshire.
He'll be in trouble if he doesn't win Iowa.
He's the Dick Gephardt, not meaning that he'll finish exactly where Gephardt did. I guess Gephardt finished third or fourth in Iowa in 2004. Not that he'll do that, but that if he doesn't do well in Iowa and meet expectations, he's done. He's got to finish a close second or five.
Oh, yeah, even a close second is going to be...
Well, a close second would put him above Obama or Clinton.
Yeah.
I think a close second, he could survive that. I think that would be... But then he goes to South Carolina.
He doesn't have very much money left.
No, that would be more of a problem. But I think he could continue on with a close second.
You know, David, he and Huckabee share that one problem. Let's say both of them win Iowa. Well, then what?
Yeah.
They're going to have to raise a king's ransom in January to get some ad money going for those February 5th states. There's 21 states voting that day, a lot of big states. I just don't know what either one of them are going to do about that.
Well, but
of course, with this recent information about the FEC money, it's going to be like March before they get their FEC money.
Yes,
so.
And then I heard about the Act Blue situation with.
Oh yeah, that's bad too.
Well, I will say this though: I think Huckabee has a chance to gain momentum fundraising, and while Edwards has probably had a more sophisticated fundraising operation going a longer time, therefore he's mined the easier, you know, lower hanging fruit more so than Huckabee has.
Oh, I think that's definitely true. I think Edwards is running out of money. I mean, I don't think he's got many places more to go.
Yeah.
To get money.
Because he's done a lot of fundraisers. Well, I guess we alluded to it. There was a big form in Forsyth County, and with the Democrat, all five U.S. Senate candidates for the Democratic nomination invited, four attended. Vernon Jones had a prior commitment. Do you know what that was, Catherine, Tim?
No.
I mean, I'm not saying y'all with Vernon, you know, but I'm just saying. Did you know what that? I mean, it may have been some commission meeting. It may have been a very legitimate.
Oh yeah, it might have been
yeah, sure it was.
Or it could have been somewhere in Buckhead. We don't know. But so anyway, he didn't make the race, but the other four attended. And anybody got a first impression of what they read and saw from the four candidates? Because John Flack put the introduction statements where we could actually make our own opinion, and of course from there we had to depend on others' opinions. Catherine, any thoughts?
Well, I didn't listen to it, but I read Griff Drift's write-up, and I talked to a couple of people who were there, and it sounds like Josh did very well. Dale Cardwell sounds like he was pretty polished and did pretty well. Rand was kind of like all over the place again. And Maggie, what's her name, Maggie?
Martinez.
Martinez was, bless her soul, props to someone who's going to run, but it sounded like she was a train wreck. I mean, she doesn't even know what the job is, basically, sounds like.
Senate Congress. Tim, I guess, did you get a chance to watch the videos on Tiny Tavern?
Yes, I did, and it pretty much mirrors what Catherine just said. Lanier and Cardwell both, I thought, did very well. They're very good speakers. They're very knowledgeable men. The other two candidates, how'd you put it, Catherine, bless their hearts.
Yeah.
You know, that's just about the size of it. I don't know, David, if Josh Lanier is going to run or not. I can't see into his mind based on this. I sure wish he would.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If he meets those goals he's talked about, it's in mid-January, so pretty much this time next month, everybody will know whether or not he's going to run. I mean, I think hauling up from Statesboro to Forsyth County is a little bit of a commitment. I do agree. I think I watched the videos, I read the write-up, and I think that Del Cardwell, he knew what he was going to say. He planned out, he said it. Josh Lanier had a nice thing relating his experience to Vietnam and to, going at the race. That was also very slick.
David, it looks like we have a guest.
We do. I think this is Kimberly Willis of the Democratic Party. Kimberly, you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening, David and Divine listeners.
Yes. Kimberly, I'm glad you called on in with us. And Kimberly, you're with the DPG, but I don't want to get your exact title incorrect. Tell us your title with the party.
I'm currently the operations manager.
Okay, and for our purposes on this show, that means that you are the delegate selection guru down at Spring Street. Is that correct?
That is correct, along with Rashad Taylor, Matt Wine, and, of course, our chair, Jane Kidd.
Yes, but, I mean, they have to have somebody that kind of knows all the procedures and ins and outs, and you're kind of the person. The first time I met you, you were very organized, had all your plan for your the selection the DPG had been given for us in April. Well, I guess let's just kind of get started with some of the specifics. A lot of our listeners probably already know, but maybe some don't. Tell us where and when the convention is.
Well, first I want to thank you again for the invitation to speak. I am more than happy to be on here and excited as well. The convention itself is August the 25th through the 28th in Denver, Colorado.
Yes. And apparently, that's a little later. Last year it was in July. We backed it up pretty much a whole month. Any ideas why that happened?
I wasn't really in on the plans with the DNC to select the timing of it. I do know that they had a long narrowing process initially with finding a location.
Yes, because I just noticed that is a later date, because some people have jobs where they don't work as much in the summer, but this year it's just changed to where it is more of a almost early fall commitment. But then if someone wants to run, how many delegates does Georgia get?
Well, there's a total of 133 total delegates. I have to kind of back up. Nationally, there's 3,515, and the state of Georgia will provide 103 pledge along with 15 unpledged conventional delegates, and then 12 committee members and 3 pages.
Yes. And some of those will be voted on at the district level. Some will be voted on the statewide level. And some are automatically decided based on elected office and other things.
That's correct. We have our unpledged delegates, or our what are known as the superdelegates, which are DNC members, Democratic members of Congress, governors, former presidents, and just important figures in the party.
Yes. And I'm on here with Tim Shiflett of Chattooga County and Catherine
Hi.
Smith of Fulton County. Tim or Catherine, do y'all have any questions?
I'd like to jump in with one because a lot of folks don't know a lot about this process. Do you find that it's customary to have a lot of new people as delegates every 4 years, or is it generally the same group of people that we see going?
Well, what I can say is that Democratic Party of Georgia is really receives mandates and goals from the DNC, and then based on those DNC mandates and goals, through the Democratic National Committee, then it trickles down through the DPG, or the Democratic Party of Georgia, to try to meet those goals as well as mandates. And so those who actually appear as far as being able to or having the opportunity to be a delegate at the convention is based on if they run, if they have the knowledge to run, and if they are, after they have applied or completed an application, if after they've run, they actually are accepted and they become a delegate.
Okay, thank you. Catherine?
Sorry. Yeah, I have a couple of questions. First of all, is there a list somewhere of these, what we might call superdelegates, like the DNC members and the, how did you call them? Important political leaders. Is it on the DPG website or?
It's not specifically listed on the website. What I can tell you is pretty much who they are. And if you want some more information, of course, you can follow back up with me, and I'd be glad to give you those specifically.
Well, we don't need to go through who they are right now, but
okay. But off top of mind, it would be President Carter.
Obviously.
And then it would be our members of Congress, and then it would be our DNC members, and then the final is our chair, Jade Kidd.
Okay. And the list of DNC members is somewhere?
They are listed on the DPG website.
Okay.
Yes, I believe, and actually some of those may change because, for instance, there'll be an election for some of the spots this spring.
Yeah.
And, for instance, Lonnie Plott's already said he will not run again, and therefore, like right now, if the convention was there, Lonnie Plott would be a delegate, but then if he still chooses not to run, then Lonnie won't be a delegate, that kind of thing.
Okay. And you said if their election is accepted, then and what under what circumstances would someone's election not be accepted?
Well, each presidential candidate has the opportunity to actually review those who are applying to become their delegate, and they actually, based on their own set of criteria, so that we don't have information as far as what their criteria is.
Okay, but it's the presidential candidate.
It's the presidential candidate. That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, and I don't know that I've heard of a situation where presidential candidates have X somebody out. That wouldn't really be a good move to X your Democratic activists that are, you know, running and won out. That's not really a good democracy kind of statement, I wouldn't think. Well, if somebody wants to go to Denver, what is the estimated cost this time to go to Denver?
What we're saying is that we'd like all delegates to be financially responsible for their own expenses.
Yes.
Which will be at approximately $3,500, which would include transportation, hotels, meals, and just general fees altogether.
Yes, and I was a page last time, so I guess I've been through the process. I will say this. I think our hotel in Boston was a little more expensive than what I've heard will be the hotel in Denver. If my understanding is right, we got more of a suburban Courtyard Marriott-type hotel.
Well, the hotel itself is called the DoubleTree Hotel.
Okay.
And it's situated in Denver's historic Stapleton and urban community with homes and shops and offices and parks and schools located about 10 minutes from downtown Denver. The rate per night is approximately, or is, $179 per night, which is which excludes local, state, and sales tax. And it is a pre-negotiated rate that requires a four-night minimum stay from August the 25th through the 28th with a deposit equal to one night's room and tax. And I will have to say that reservation can be made May the 26th, 2008 through July the 15th, 2008 on a first-come, first-served basis. And we're asking everyone, although we're disclosing the location of the delegate, to please not reach out to them or contact them, or at least until you've received the delegate convention guide, which will be sent out to those who have been selected as a delegate on May 26, 2008.
Yes, because there'll be two rounds of processes, one at the district level and then the state level. And then from there, I guess, there's the approval by the presidential candidates.
That's correct.
That'll be the process. So, and that is, I believe, I'm not sure the exact cost of the room, but it, I believe it was more in Boston. And the good news is a lot of the meals, you know, the breakfast is paid for at the hotel. A lot of times different groups will host your lunches. And then that only leaves the supper. And the tricky thing about supper is you're thinking, oh, supper, most expensive meal, but you have to get in the convention hall at 5 o'clock. Which means usually you're eating stadium food, like you're going to a Hawks or Falcons game. And so it's not expensive, but it's not really good either. So, I mean, look, I can only eat so much of, you know, maybe McDonald's. I think the Fleet Center of McDonald's and, you know, nachos and hot dogs and just, you know, stadium food. Because that's, you know, they open the concession stands just like you would at, you know, a ball game or the circus. So it is a really enjoyable process, and so anybody that was interested, you know, should run and go experience it once, or maybe more than once, but it's a different kind of thing, and it's a chance to be part of history, given that two of our top three, or actually three of our top four candidates would be making history should they be either nominated and elected president. Well, Kimberly, are there any other things that you want to share that you just really need to let everyone know about the process?
Well, first, I do want to direct everyone who is listening to two documents online. They can be downloaded for free at GeorgiaDemocrat.org. And the first one is the actual plan itself, which is pretty extensive and detailed. And then the second one is entitled the 2008 Georgia Delegate Guide and Application. And that can be found, again, at GeorgiaDemocrat.org if you click on Election 08 and then Delegate Selection. And then once you've received or downloaded that information, it will cover the national overview, which will give you information about the presidential candidates, the Democratic National Convention, the Georgia Delegate Convention, the Electoral College, and the DNC. Then there's also a Georgia overview, which covers the Democratic Party of Georgia, the State Committee, Executive Committee, and then also members of the staff at the DPG. It also covers the delegate selection overview, which is the number of Georgia delegates, Georgia mandates, and goals. The training workshop dates, which are specifically tied into the congressional districts. The election information, of course, Robert's Rules of Orders when you participate in either the workshop or the election. Then there's also a national overview, which includes information on transportation, hotels, meals, sightseeing, and it also gives you a day in the life, which gives you an example of what each day will be like once you actually become a delegate and you're there in Denver. There are examples on how to reduce expenses along with FEC rules and regulations on fundraising. There are also examples and forms, including the candidate checklist, which specifically tells us how and when to submit our application and key dates to remember. There's the application itself, statement of intent, the candidacy, the party declaration, the voter party declaration, along with references and also contacts specific to your congressional district. So, again, I'd like to encourage everyone to go online at GeorgiaDemocrat.org and click on Election 08, then Delegate Selection to download the 2008 Georgia Delegate Guide and Application.
Yes. Okay. Well, I hope everybody saw how to do that. And, of course, there'll be trainings happening throughout the state, and those will be listed on the website of the Democratic Party. And other places, correct?
They're specifically listed in the Georgia Delegate Guide and Application.
Yeah.
And it's page 15 for the training workshops.
Okay. Well, I guess as the process unfolds, we'll keep people updated, because I know just before the delegate selections district-wide, we can then tell people where those are happening, give the list out. And if there's more information that you need to share between now and those times, you feel free to call in or zip us an email so we can share on the air each Sunday information as it comes out.
Well, certainly, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kimberly.
And thank you again for the invitation.
Sure thing. Yes, well, that was good to have that piece of information, because obviously, you know, every 4 years, that's the two conventions of the biggest political parties, events that there are for activists. And people are certainly interested in all those ins and outs. I mean, it's kind of a way that presidential elections a lot of times bring new people to our party that aren't involved. Now, some of those stay and some of those go, as we've seen, you know, cycle by cycle, right, Tim?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Well, we got a little more time, and there was still one more big topic that I wanted to talk about, but I wanted to change it up how we would talk about it. I guess if people have listened to the show, they know I'm a pretty big Falcons fan. I actually was employed by the team for a while and have been a season ticket holder for a good many years now. And this past week was just, and I guess it continued on today with a big loss. It's really been one of the worst weeks in team history. But there is a political side to a lot of what went down, and I kind of wanted to look at that, not necessarily just the football side. The first place I'll start is Michael Vick was finally sentenced, and, of course, you know, he'd already pled guilty and taken responsibility, but the sentencing was still to be left. Now, a lot of letters were written on his behalf, and some of those were athletes that know him for whatever reason, from in town Atlanta, but we did have a politician, Shirley Franklin, that wrote a letter on his behalf and at one point called him a role model. Now, of course, is that saying that he's a role model because he's a star and people are going to look up to him, or he's a role model by things he did? My question to you, both Catherine and Tim, is did Shirley Franklin hurt herself in a statewide, possible future statewide run? Catherine?
Well, I don't know if she did that, but I'm very disappointed in that letter. I just found out about it today, and I read it before I came on the show, and I certainly understand her position that, you know, he did come from an underprivileged background and that he was a role model for children in Atlanta who also face those same kind of problems or you know, however you want to put it. But I think that any role model he was lost when we found out about the way he treated those dogs. I mean, I just don't know how you can hold on to that idea that he was a role model after learning about this. And I think it's important. I'm just disappointed that we would try to just erase that and say, oh, well, he's a role model. And I it's just a big disappointment to me personally. I've been an avid supporter of Shirley Franklin, even when she has been behind things that I don't necessarily agree with. I think I've always found her to be a dynamic and generous Democrat, and I'm very disappointed. I'm actually kind of shocked, actually.
Yeah.
Whether it hurts her around the state, I don't know, because I think there's a lot of people that I talk to who are don't agree with me about Vic, who think that he was railroaded and that it wasn't such a big deal and all that kind of stuff.
Well, if you look at the polling, that's only 19% of the people. Actually, they took a poll in his area where he lived in Virginia and went to Virginia Tech, and apparently Virginia Tech people are more forgiving of him than the Georgia people are, and only 19%. Felt he was railroaded. I think about 40-some-odd felt he was treated just right with roughly two-year sentence, and another 40 thought he should have been harsher. So that I think it will hurt her. Tim, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, David, I'm just going to speak from a standpoint of pure politics, and that's this. I don't know what the mayor or her staff might have been thinking. I don't know if she did this on her own without consulting her staff, But now this letter is a thing, and that thing is out there. And, of course, someone is going to bring it up should she ever run for statewide office. And, of course, it can't help but do anything but hurt her.
Yes, and I think that's such a shame. She was such a one of our political stars that had a lot of upside. She still does have upside, but, you know, it just was going to be such a careful way she'd have to go about winning a statewide race, and this kind of thing, you know, can and will be held against her, if you will. And it wasn't necessary because the judge was going to sentence based on the actions that he did and if he, you know, how he treated his honor. You know, he made a commitment that he would give information about other activities, and I think that hurt him in sentencing, the fact that he used marijuana while he was, you know, taking drug tests. That hurt him, and there was nothing that a letter that, you know, she wrote was really going to do to affect it, I don't think. But I guess there was more things after that. That night, Arthur Blank, and the reason I bring Arthur Blank up is I've heard at times, and this is kind of, I guess, you know, more fantasy candidate kind of talk, but at times people will mention him as a possible candidate for office. So I guess then now his actions come into being. There were two things that you kind of have to look at in this. One is just the overall. The Falcons are just really having a rough time. I mean, coaches leaving him, people lying to him, things in shambles. He, you know, Vic lied to him. He has problems there. So that's one set of issues that come up. But then a second one, there was a comment that he said that, you know, if Michael Vick gets in prison and he doesn't watch his weight and he eats a lot of food, and he mentioned several kinds of food, and one of those kinds of foods was fried chicken. And some people were trying to, you know, construe that as that Arthur Blank made a racial comment. I think Arthur Blank, for one thing, he's maxed out, both he and his wife, to Barack Obama, so I can't see that a person that is willing to give, you know, upwards of $4,000 for a black man to be president being, you know, a big, you know, cluxer, if you will.
Well,
Tim, what are your thoughts?
Well, he gave $2,100 to Mitt Romney, too.
Well, he gave to a lot of people. I mean, I think he also maxed out to Hillary Clinton. It's not that he's four square only behind Barack Obama, but obviously I don't think if you have, you know, deep racial feelings, you're going to max out and give nearly $5,000 to a candidate if you don't, you know, if you have those kind of feelings. Tim, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think people are going to be just a little bit more forgiving of Arthur Blank for a couple of reasons. Number one, every bit of this has hit him like a ton of bricks. This man has spent a lot of money on this team and has committed himself to improving this team, and what happens? He loses his star, his coach walks away from him. Everything bad that you can think of has happened to this man this week. Secondly, I don't think it'll be looked on as bad because Arthur Blanks is not an elected official. We hold elected officials to a little bit different standard when they say things like this than we would private citizens.
Yeah.
I agree with that. I think that's absolutely true. I don't think it's going to hurt him if he should decide to run for something.
Yes, and I think, Tim, in some of our pre-show talks, you made a good point about his age. While he's, you know, dynamic in a lot of ways, he is, would you say 65, Tim?
65 years old, yeah.
So obviously if he decided to run, he'd have to do it rather quick, and I think he enjoys, you know, running the Falcons, and obviously that seems like a full-time job at this point, given the level of distraction and hands-onness that
David, not to be cavalier, but all things considered, I think folks ought to give Arthur Blanks a break. He's had a rough week.
He has, but, you know, on the Kudzu Vine, we got to look at the political angle of every story. Of course, there are things we just hadn't got to yet, but I never want to cut the outrage of the week short. So, Tim, go ahead and go with that, and if we got a few more minutes, we can cover a topic or two around the South.
All right, David, our old friend Bill Shipp wrote an interesting little article this week. It seems that about 1,100 state technology jobs are being outsourced to private companies. Now, the state says that this is being done to save money. But just look at who pushed this move through. None other than our illustrious governor, Sonny Perdue. Of course the governor would never have done something like this right before the last election. That would have been a bit suicidal. So why did he do it now, though? Well, perhaps the answer to that question can be found by simply looking at those who attended the press conference when Purdue announced all of this. The room had several big business lobbyists in it. That's because their friend Sonny was giving them a $617 million Christmas present. Never mind that the people of Georgia were losing these jobs. Never mind that these jobs would probably wind up in India or in Indonesia. It was a happy day for Sonny and his buddies. Chip, in his article about this, reached the right conclusion, and it's something that most all of us have suspected all along. Sonny Perdue intends to extend his political career. Perdue wants to be a senator, or maybe a vice presidential candidate, or maybe even a presidential candidate, God forbid, in 2012. A deal like this one with the jobs gets old Sonny into bed with the type of money guys he'll need to pursue his political ambitions. A group called Purdue PAC is already going strong in raising money. The guys that attended that press conference can fill that PAC's coffers full. And in the meantime, those 1,100 badly needed jobs are gone. And once again, I must remind all of you out there listening to me that it really does matter who you vote for. And then there's old Sonny. What a shame it would be if this party switcher achieved national prominence. It would be much better for all of us if January 2011 brought the end to his time in politics. Because someday the Republicans are going to find out that Sonny Perdue cares no more for them than he did for the Democrats, David.
Yes, I don't know that Sonny Perdue, speaking of that, has much more upside. He's already overachieved, so I don't know where there is to go for him after this. Well, I guess talking about some things around the South, since, of course, we're trying to be more of a regional show, several things. The U.S. Senate race in Kentucky, their state auditor, Crit Lewin, and I'm probably just not pronouncing that last name right at all, she decided not to seek the U.S. Senate seat, leaving them with Greg Stumbo, the outgoing attorney general, and Andrew Horn being the two top candidates. And they were looking at this state auditor being a very high-profile candidate that could win that seat, and she did not make the race. Then in Mississippi, Mike Moore, the very, very popular former attorney general, has said he will not run. What do you think that does for our chances in picking up Senate seats around the South, Catherine?
Ooh, I haven't even looked at any of that, so I can't
speak to it. Yeah. Tim?
Well, Mitch McConnell just breathed a sigh of relief, David, because I really, really do think that he's in a little bit of trouble up there. That state could very well be a battleground state, you know, in the presidential election next year. And right now, Senator McConnell's popularity has been attached a little bit to the ex-governor, or soon-to-be ex-governor, that just got killed in his election up there. So it was a little bit of luck for him. I think now he might hang on. And frankly, I don't know if we ever had a shot in Mississippi or not. That state is something else.
It's tough. I guess the one big hope they had was if Mike Moore, who was very popular.
Well, who does that leave then? Musgrove, maybe?
Musgrove, I think Ronnie Musgrove would be the ex-governor who did lose in his last election, but he was a pretty dynamic leader when he was governor, but then had some personal issues. And then also I think Ricky Cole, who's the former head of the Democratic Party, who ran a very, very solid race for agriculture commissioner against a party switcher, I think he might be a candidate that looks at it too and would certainly not embarrass us and do us proud in running hard. And there are two Senate seats up at the same time. That might help us too, because sometimes people just naturally like to ticket split, and with both races are on the ballot at the same time, maybe that makes one more of a viable option for us. And I guess another race that was a little bit of good news, there was another poll that came out that showed Mary Landrieu pretty, you know, not comfortably ahead. I mean, she's still got to keep raising money. She's still at the top of the target list, if you will, for the Republicans in the Senate, because they really just don't have any targets. But that poll came out and showed her with a 4-point lead, a Survey USA poll, but still under 50 against John Kennedy, which is just, he's not the John Kennedy we all know from history that former president. So, you know, that's you know, it seems like she'll still take that race given how her brother did so well, and she's a pretty dynamic leader like he is. And in fact, she's the more senior politician of the two, serving longer. And then I guess here in Georgia, another John Barrow challenger bailed out on the race. Buddy Carter a while back said he won't run. And then now Wayne Mosley, that a lot of bloggers were propping up, you know, the in-state Republican bloggers, he's decided he won't run. And now that there's some congressional aides, there's an African-American female who was an aide, I don't know if it was to Kingston or to Norwood, is looking at running, and then also an ex-Max Burns aide, John Stone, is looking at running. So he does have a challenger, but it appears it's not the top-tier challengers that they tried to recruit. Tim or Catherine, any thoughts there?
Well, I do have a quick comment there. Someone asked me just the other day, why is a guy like Barra, who obviously would be at the top of any list of targets, why is he not drawing a heavyweight challenger? And to be honest with you, I didn't have an answer to one of y'all.
I think they're going to go more after Marshall, it looks like, just because they've, you know, they have a better candidate there to run. That may come down to the biggest thing, the biggest difference. Catherine, any thoughts? I see that the show's rapidly coming to a close. Another good show. I'll still try to book us some great guests and post them on Tondish Tavern and elsewhere. Glad Kimberly Willis of the Democratic Party of Georgia could come in for us. And glad that the Forsyth County Democrats held a good forum and it was so reported on so we could share that with everybody. Anything else, Tim or Catherine?
Nope, that's about it.
Well, Catherine, glad you could be on the show with us tonight. And come in anytime. Talk to y'all soon.
Good night.
Good night.